I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are author Jimmy Israel, sports reporter Pablo Torre, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, and new to the shop, communications strategist, former Obama administration communications staffer Corey Elans. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. How we doing?
What's up?
Good to be here. Thank you for letting me in the house. I appreciate it.
Oh, man. Come on. Wake up, everybody.
Late night. Wow, late night. Corey. The big speech. The big game.
I'm in Southern California. I'm just happy to have the lights on, I'll tell you.
Right. Yeah, we are, too, over here. But anyway, for different reasons. Corey, my man, thanks for joining us. Welcome to the shop.
I appreciate it. Glad to be here.
All right, well, let's get started with the president's speech last night. President Obama announced a nearly $450 billion plan to jumpstart job growth. Now, that's a lot of money, Michelle.
You know, it is a lot of money. And, of course, the day after a big rollout of an announcement, you want to talk about the substance, but you have to talk about the politics, too. And the president, you know, actually, unusually, it seems to me, actually went right at the politics in the speech last night. I'll just play a short clip where he talked about the fact that, you know, there are philosophical differences underlying the approach that people think we should take to the economy. He says, but, you know, elections are how we settle that. But guess what, folks? The election's a while away and we don't have time. This is what he had to say about that.
And maybe some of you have decided that those differences are so great that we can only resolve them at the ballot box. But know this. The next election is 14 months away. And the people who sent us here, the people who hired us to work for them, they don't have the luxury of waiting 14 months.
Wow. Thanks for that, Michelle. You know, I like the urgency. I like the urgency of his voice, man. It sounds
it's
like
new. I like it.
Yeah. It sounds like he's been hanging out in the barbershop. You know, he's got, I mean, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, it comes across. I like to hear a little bit of emoting. You know, he's conveying his agenda in a forceful way. It's a little tardy. You know, I guess I'll take it. But, you know, he had some difficulty capturing the imagination of the gallery. You know, you had Democrat Jim Warren reportedly was reading a newspaper. And, you know, and of course, there was Jesse Jackson Jr. was also reportedly studying the fine painting work on the ceiling. So, you know, I don't know. It might be too little, too late. Thanks for that one, Michelle. Ruben, I know you must have a take,
I mean,
right?
Come on.
You've been critical of the president's efforts. What do you think of the plan?
I'm not, and as I said before, I'm not alone in that regard. One of the president's big problems is the crumbling of his liberal base and people who previously supported him who just think he caves in too easily, doesn't fight hard enough, and a variety of other criticisms they have about him. This is really bizarre. Here you have a president who comes forward and says, this is really urgent. We really have to get on this. We can't wait 14 months. This is a president who waited 30 months to have this speech, as making Jimmy's point. I mean, this is he finally got around to this idea, and suddenly it's urgent that we get it done now. It wasn't urgent over the last 30 months. I think the problem with the president isn't the policy. I think a lot of what he had to say was good, and it is good. But the era is so toxic. It's so polluted because people in that gallery, particularly Republicans, they see him as somebody who has constantly criticized them, made them out to be the enemy, demonized them, not worked with them on health care, marginalized them, and been dishonest in his dealings with them. And then his response in an economic crisis to take all the spending he's already given. By the way, spending for which he has been criticized by elements of the black community because a lot of that spending went to Wall Street. A lot of that spending didn't make its way to Main Street and to urban neighborhoods, right? So he takes the spending And he doubles down. He says, we need more spending. And let me just end with this contradiction. Republicans, I think, deserve a spanking as follows. This contradiction that Republicans have, they go around and say, like Rick Perry said in the debate the other day, that a president can't create a single job. That's what they say. That's their line. But they criticize Obama for not criticizing creating jobs. That's a contradiction, right? Mm-hmm. Well, likewise, Obama has a glaring contradiction because we have come on this show, you know, for the last 2.5 years, and I have heard supporters and others say about Obama, the president can't do much to improve the economy, no matter who the president is. And now we're told that he can miraculously create all these jobs. I mean, both sides are guilty of some serious BS because they say what's convenient at the moment that suits their agenda, but tomorrow they'll be saying something else.
Rubin's taking the Republicans out to the woodshed and get all James Evans on them. My man, Corey.
Right on.
Now, you are the former director of African-American media for the White, for the Obama White House. Now, members of the Congressional Black Caucus and some other folks say he's not doing enough for African-Americans who are out of work. Do you think, you know, we got a clear answer now last night?
I think what you saw from the president last night is he brought a lot of energy, he brought a lot of focus, he brought a lot of specifics,
right.
And again, he brought policies that are going to help the broad swath of the American people. That includes African Americans. And when you take a look at the specifics of what he put on the table, dealing with unemployment insurance, making sure that small businesses have incentives through taxes to hire more folks and bring them into their shops, that is going to directly impact the African-American community because they're the ones who have been disproportionately impacted by the economy and by what's been going on right now. So I think what you heard last night was a level of specifics, a level of energy, a level of excitement that is going to energize the African-American community and give them hope and faith that this president's going to come through for them.
You know, it's interesting, though, that people keep saying, oh, you know, black folks are losing faith in the president. One of the things that's been surprising to me is given how bad the economic numbers are, that African-Americans, the polls show, are still among the most optimistic about their futures. And that is remarkable.
It really
is
extraordinary.
You have to wonder what's that about.
Yeah, but those same people want Arsenio to be back on television, too. So I don't know if those people count.
You know, just let me say one other thing about this. People talking at both sides of the mouth. I think Rubin made an important point to have people criticize the president saying, you know, he doesn't know how to create jobs. But, oh, by the way, you know, the government doesn't create jobs. So the government does create jobs. I mean, one of the interesting, I think, talking points that's going to emerge in the course of this presidential campaign is how much of the job growth in Texas
Absolutely.
And Massachusetts
yep.
is actually
Absolutely
due to government
right.
spending.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's evidence that most of the job growth in Texas, which Governor Rick Perry leads, is due to government spending, federal spending, of one order or another. And in Massachusetts, it's true that Mitt Romney's taking it on the chin from the Republican base for supporting, you know, the health care initiative that later became kind of the model for the federal one. But guess who paid the bill? The federal government.
Absolutely.
So that's one of those questions that's going to have to be answered. And the only other point I'd make on this is that the public sector is the primary employer of African-American men. It's the second most important employer of African-American women. So this really does hit close to home, whether people understand that or not, for specific communities. It doesn't affect every community the same way. Anyway, I know, Pablo, you want to get in it.
Yeah, I mean, what I was going to say was I thought the window dressing was good. You know, he was more rousing, more passionate. Jobs is the right focus, obviously, rebranding it that way. Infrastructure makes a tremendous amount of sense. For me, though, I mean, speaking to sort of Rubin's point in a slightly different way about the toxic environment, I mean, this isn't going to pass, right? I mean, the House is not going to pass this, at least not in the current form.
Right.
And
right.
so for me, it's kind of like, oh, Obama, you know, is taking sort of a principled stand here. But it still had this sense, you know, I think his liberal base would criticize him for saying, why didn't you advocate for more? I mean, it's not nearly large enough, it seems, to make a true impact spending-wise. And so you have this sort of sheen still, to me at least, that it sounds an attempt to make a transaction with the Republican Party when that's just off the table at this point.
Here, you know, it's Rubin again. Let me just jump in on this. I think that Pablo's right. This is a free shot. You know, this is a sports metaphor. This is a free shot because he's right. Most people are just going to focus on the election. Those Republicans out there who are sitting in that audience and Republicans around the country do not want this president to succeed. They never did.
Mm-hmm.
And they are looking for the next election. Their answer to the economy is defeat Obama. Put in somebody who, I will say, actually knows what he's doing. The question isn't color anymore. It's competence, you know. This is a guy who, the criticism goes, and I think some of it is warranted, is just out of ideas in the same way that Bush 41 was out of ideas in 1992 and had to be replaced by Bill Clinton. So in that regard, they're never going to give him this jobs package. And so this is a free shot. He gets to propose anything he wants. And then when it doesn't pass, he gets to blame the Republicans for not passing
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
I'm not sure how honest
this.
That is.
Yeah.
Here's the thing real quick that we have to see. It's not just about the speech,
ahead,
though.
Corey.
It's about the follow through. What is the president, what is the White House going to do to actually drive this agenda now that they've announced it to the American people and had it on such a big stage? So what do you see? You see the president going out today, taking it to the streets in Eric Cantor's district in Virginia. That's not a small thing. Not only, and he's following the advice that he's been given by a number of folks, take this story to Republican districts and dare those guys to say, we don't want bridges built. We don't want our people to have jobs. He's taken that to Eric Cantor, and you've seen Eric Cantor's rhetoric be a little bit milder over the past couple of days, looking for areas of common ground. So working.
I bet one common ground is that, Ruben, I bet you're that line about needing to get that infrastructure back up was – was resonating with you, if you indeed heard it,
right,
when you were
right.
among the 1.4 million households
yes.
who were affected by the major blackout.
Yes.
I think you're thinking
yes.
infrastructure.
Wow.
Right. Yeah.
I'm
for
telling
that.
You. You have no idea how dependent you are on something simple like electricity, right? For everything. And you're suddenly you have no Wi-Fi because the router goes down. You have no lights. You have no anything. You can't turn on the stove or the oven. And you can't go down to put gas in your car or go down to the supermarket.
Can I ask you this, though? Were you all afraid that it was
America.
But were you afraid that it was a terrorist threat? No, Ruben, seriously, serious question. Were you guys afraid that it was
no.
a terrorist attack? Or
no,
did you realize it was worker error or whatever?
I think that the first thought is, and for the longest time, is that we're just overrunning the air conditioning. It was a hot day in California. Mm. We've suffered through rolling blackouts before in California because of hot days and everybody turning on their air conditioning. It turns out that it was not that, but that's sort of the first thought it goes to. And then you sort of think to yourself, wait a minute, it's a hot day, but it's September. Shouldn't this have happened, you know, on a hot day in July? But I'll tell you one positive thing, Michelle, and I thought about this. Believe it or not, you know, when you have nothing else to do and no television and nothing, you have to go outside. It's cooler outside. And so all the neighbors go outside and the neighbors congregate outside. And it's this wonderful thing where you get to know your neighbor again and you begin to confront this idea that so many people who live not just in the suburbs but around the country, you go home after a long day, you bring down the garage door, okay, and then you go do your business inside and you never necessarily get together with your neighbors anymore and go out there and associate with folks. And people were doing that last night. And it just tells you how incredibly dependent we are with all these little electronic toys that I worship. I can't do without them, but it's sad. It's a nice change, a nice little reminder of what it was like back in the day.
If you're just joining us, this is what it's like in the barbershop. We get together, we hang out, we visit, we talk. If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin, and we have with us author Jimmy Israel, syndicated columnist Ruben Navarrete, Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre, and former Obama administration staffer, he's a communication strategist now, Corey Elins. Back to you, Jimmy. I think we should talk about the GOP debate. We only have about 5 minutes left, and I know that people want to talk about that. You know, who impressed you, Jimmy?
Well, you know, I like Governor Perry, man. I like his hubris. He's trying to get his Biden on before he even has any real steam behind him. I mean, my man's, you know, and the whole thing is
throwing
you
want to
wait until you want to wait until you get some good steam behind you before you just start popping crazy like Joe Biden. But my man, he's like, you know, forget about it. I'm gonna put my crazy right out front so you can see.
I have no sense at all.
I have no. He's like the Tracy Morgan of the GOP. I love that. I love that kind of thing.
All right, you can see Mitt Romney leaning over saying, "Rick, are you sure you want to pull like a Romney and just sort of like, you know, dodge the question altogether and not say anything controversial?" I can't remember one thing
you
Mitt Romney says.
You've interviewed Rick Perry, right?
I have. I know Rick Perry. I've interviewed him. And I think, you know, pretty much, you know, what you see is what you get. I think that he's very provocative in the stuff that he says. The conversation, Michelle, just on Social Security alone. I mean, I found it interesting that here you have all these people up there not wanting to talk about how insolvable Social Security is for younger people. And he comes out and says it. And then they say, well, you use the word Ponzi scheme. Shame on you. He should have turned around and said, what world do you people live in? I mean, this is fantasy land. You guys are saying that somehow the program is sustainable. So he's very provocative, and to that regard, he's very refreshing. But I can't remember one thing that Mitt Romney has said now in two different elections that are memorable. This is a guy who, unfortunately, kind of in the John Kerry way, talks and talks and talks and talks, but doesn't say anything because he usually doesn't want to stick his neck out. He's just so incredibly careful. And that's one thing you're not going to get from Rick Perry. He ain't careful.
How about Corey? Gosh. Corey, who is the White House most worried about? Is it Perry?
I will tell you, I think that Perry is going to be formidable if he gets the nomination, primarily because of what was just offered. He's somebody who will go out, who will speak the truth, in air quotes, and people tend to like that, especially in Republican primaries. So I think the White House is concerned about him, but I think mostly they're concerned about Mitt Romney. Mitt Romney,
really? Why?
I think he comes across as a moderate, even though their job ultimately is to uncover the radical right-wing ideals that he has. But I think he comes across as a moderate. And I think, you know, he has all the intangibles. He has the look. He has the speak. And I think he matches up well against Obama in a debate.
Oh, interesting. Well, we want to save some time to talk about the the real reason we all turned on our TVs last night in the NFL season.
Amen.
Pablo, the last two Super Bowl champions faced off at Lambeau Field with the Packers coming out on top. The Packers went to work, right? Didn't they? They went to work.
Completely. And, you know, I was waiting. Luckily, Obama obviously moved the speech before it, but I was waiting for Obama to schedule in pauses where he goes, "And the Packers have just gotten a third down," and just sort of keep us updated intermittently. But, I mean, it's the NFL's world. I mean, we've all been waiting for this. ESPN, notably, before this game, had a new deal done with the NFL, $1.9 billion annually, which is more than any league ever in history for a TV contract. And last night was sort of the prime product on display. I mean, it was an offensive feast, 876 yards of offense, fourth and goal in the last play. And you had everybody on Twitter at bars saying, "God bless the NFL, it's back." And
records broken. There was one that one long carry, right?
Yeah. A guy returning it from 108 yards. It'll be really interesting
to
see
how this
season
plays out.
But
I didn't watch it all. I don't care at all, right?
Yeah, right.
All right, quickly, who do we like for the Super Bowl? I'm going to put everybody. I know, isn't it horrible when you do that? Somebody at the beginning of the season wants to put you on the spot, Corey.
Well, I got to tell you, after last night, you got to go with Green Bay to repeat. I mean, they were extraordinary. The quarterback did a great job, and I think they have everything they need to go back.
Ruben?
I think it's a safe bet. I'm going to answer it this way. Indianapolis is in a bad way with Peyton Manning out, so that's going to change the dynamic out there for all the other teams in that conference. But hope springs eternal. Oakland Raiders, baby. This is our year.
No. Oh, all right, God. Pablo, who do you like?
I'm going to go with the Eagles and barbershop favorite Michael Vick, my guy.
All right. Jimmy, you get the last word.
I'm going to rock with the Bears. I'll pray for the Browns, but
come
you
on,
know.
Jimmy.
And
Chicago.
And
hope springs eternal.
Wow. And Arsenio
right,
really,
yeah, I know, right? Right.
And Arsenio really is, must be coming back, right? Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and author of the book The Denzel Principle. He joined us from member station WCPN in, guess where, Cleveland. Ruben Navarrete is a syndicated columnist who writes for the Washington Post Writers Group, Latino Magazine, and Pajamas Media. He was with us from San Diego. Pablo Torre writes for Sports Illustrated. He joined us from NPR Studios in New York. Corey Elins is a senior vice president of the strategic communications firm Vox Global, the former director of African American media for the Obama administration. He was here with us, guess where, Washington, D.C. Thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.